and welcome back to Forecast News with Millie and Afshin. You'll notice we've had a name change since last week. That's because the Murdoch family have since bought the rights to this show and they've demanded a rebrand. We also hope it will give you a better idea of what we're doing on this show, and that is looking ahead at what's going to be happening this week around the world. And we've handpicked some events I think you ought to know about, and we'll be giving you our thoughts on them. And we'll hope you'll also let us know what you think as well. But Afshin, it's looking like a busy week, so I think let's kick off with Monday. Now, before you
Monday is the best way to start if we're going to do a week ahead.
Yeah, and the best day of the week, as everyone knows. But now, Afshin, before you scoff at me, I know you said last week that no one cares about Britain, but we are both British, and so I think the first story should be set in the country of our birth. And of course, there is a lot going on this week, and particularly today, just before we started recording, UK Home Secretary Suella Braverman has been sacked. And that has led to former UK Prime Minister David Cameron coming in as Foreign Secretary. Now, this is the same Prime Minister who had to resign because he couldn't convince the British public to agree with him on remaining in the EU. So there's a lot going on today that I think is really going to have a big impact.
Wait, didn't he have to resign over all the corruption, the Green Seal capital corruption? You're right. It was Brexit.
David Cameron. Well,
yeah, huge corruption scandal.
Well, I would say, often there's really two things in this story. So Suella Braverman, some people may not know who she is, but why this is significant that she's ultimately been sacked is she's the fifth Home Secretary to be sacked, or at least have been replaced, since the 2019 general election. And it seems to be the case that it's the media who is really forcing out these politicians, and it's the media who is undermining the democracy.
What are you talking about?
Politicians out. What? You don't agree?
Undermining democracy. Rishi Sunak wasn't even elected as Prime Minister by the people of Britain. And David Cameron wasn't even an MP before being appointed Foreign Secretary because he's going to be made a Lord. The idea that Britain is a democracy is beyond me. Didn't they have to get permission from King Charles just ahead of his 75th birthday to even give permission for Cameron to be Foreign Secretary because he has to be made a Lord first?
But actually, you bring up that Rishi Sunak has not been elected. That's exactly right. There have been three UK prime ministers since the 2019 general election, five home secretaries, and there doesn't seem to be democracy anymore. But it's the media who are relentless in removing these politicians, that if the media are deciding that they don't agree with something, the government are listening and they're removing those politicians.
I'm not sure about that. The media didn't even know that Cameron was going to be doing this. They seem to be completely out of touch with what's actually... obviously, Rishi Sunak did not want that Home Secretary. He runs MI5, by the way. So she has lots of secrets as she's disgruntled.
He hired her in the first place.
He didn't want a rival ahead of poll ratings showing a defeat at the next general election. Wasn't that it?
Thing about this, if we remember at the weekend, it was the pro-Palestinian protesters in the UK which were protesting Armistice Day, which was controversial, and Suella Braverman, who wasn't very happy about that decision.
She called those protesting for peace on Armistice Day hate marches, didn't she?
Sure, and I don't agree with that, but we've also got to remember the Rwanda Supreme Court, the court decision is this Wednesday, and it was the controversy over that, which we've been hearing about nonstop.
You're going to have to explain that. What on earth is Rwanda? It's the anniversary, isn't it, of the genocide or something at the International Criminal Court this week. Explain to our international viewers. They wanted to deport all people seeking asylum from British wars to Rwanda.
Effectively, what's happened, Afshin, is there are too many migrants coming onto the UK shores that they just... No, in the sense that they don't have the space for them.
What do you mean they don't have the space? And they're not migrants, they're refugees from British foreign policy.
Whoever they are, they're lacking space. They're being put up in hotels, which are overcrowded, and it's costing
Wait, the whole world's population could fit on the Isle of Wight in southern England, couldn't it? With a meter between people.
Together like this.
I don't think Britain's cramped.
Besides the point, it's costing a lot of money to bring these people in for whatever reason, and the British government have decided, well, to mitigate the issues that it's causing the UK and the money it's costing and the space issue, the government had come up with a decision to send those migrants or some of those migrants to Rwanda to await processing.
Why are you calling them migrants? They're not birds.
Okay, people who have come to the UK.
Who is seeking asylum from persecution?
Okay, it doesn't matter what the reason is. It could be for a very legitimate reason, but the point is they're not able to process fast enough. And then what happened was human rights organizations were coming in and saying, this is not acceptable, this is not okay, and this has led to this court decision. But the media has really driven this. I mean, this morning, Afshin, just before we heard of Suella Braverman being sacked, the BBC, in one of its articles, says, if you're Rishi Sunak and you're tempted to move her, perhaps best to do it before Wednesday, as she would be emboldened and strengthened if the court says yes and she's still in post. So it's the BBC saying, even if the court on Wednesday agreed with Suella Braverman's decision to send these migrants or refugees to Rwanda, she should still go anyway. And it really feels like it's driven by a media storm. Whatever the media thinks now is what the government will be. And I'm an advocate of free speech. I'm not saying that, but it seems the media has a too strong hold on deciding who's going to be.
The Prime Minister, Sunak is associated with this policy anyway, so it doesn't matter if he's ejected and sacked the Home Secretary, because he backed her policies on Rwanda. So the fact the BBC said, it's good that this happens before. No, Sunak is associated with all of this.
Well, I think. They should be given a chance to carry out their decisions. I mean, as we can say, Rishi Sunak wasn't elected, so are any of these people rightly in power anyway? That's another question. But of course, it's interesting that David Cameron has now become Foreign Secretary, because of course he had to resign as UK Prime Minister, and he's really been out of the limelight and out of politics.
He didn't have to resign, in fairness to Cameron, did he? He felt he had to fall on his sword because he failed, as you said, to persuade Britain.
I think there was a lot of disgruntlement, and with the fact that people then in the next general election voted for Boris Johnson, who was anti-EU and a Brexiteer. It was clear that the Prime Minister in power needed to be a Brexiteer, and David Cameron wasn't the right man for that. He, in fairness to him, acknowledged that and accepted that, but I don't think the British people would have allowed him to stay in. But it is very interesting now to see him as Foreign Secretary, and I think there will be big implications to see what he will do in this job and to see the global impact that that will have.
And for those who think Britain isn't important, because it does have nuclear weapons, submarines all around the world, five of them, wandering around, capable of destroying entire countries, some people say, with necessary US approval, because Britain can't actually operate them without that. But the fact is, Cameron was someone who tried to persuade Obama to destroy Syria completely. Syria bombed in the past 24 hours by the United States, it should be added. And Obama said no, eventually, the red lines, the fake chemical attack. Cameron tried to persuade him to do that, and Cameron was a huge supporter of the destruction of Africa's richest per capita country, Libya. Him and Sarkozy were there at the forefront of destroying Africa's richest country. So Cameron is well remembered in the global South for, as I say, his harm to Africa, his harm to West Asia, but he is a friend of China. But he is a friend of China because his investments are. And I should just say, at least he's an Etonian. He went to Eton.
Of course, we do love our Etonians as British prime ministers. But, it's up to what side you're on. And it's up to what side you're on to make the case or make the decision on whether you think those are right or wrong. Maybe if you're listening to this, let us know. Do you think it's a good that David Cameron is now Foreign Secretary, and do you think he'll do good?
Are we on Monday still?
We're on the first story, so we better move on. We better move on quickly. Now, I will say, actually, off the back of this, and you'll scoff at this as well, you know, speaking of politicians arguably being bullied out of office, actually from today it's Anti-Bullying Week, which is to raise awareness. I don't think that's very funny.
I know, I just feel very bullied here in the idea that Suella Braverman was bullied out of, I mean, you know, the media. They think they're powerful. They don't have any power, I think, arguably.
Well, power enough that the government are listening to them and just not ignoring what the media says. Of course, they have a right to free speech, but, you know, they don't dictate who's in charge and who isn't. But it is Anti-Bullying Week, and, you know, that's raising awareness for, you know, young children in particular, and awareness for bullying. Now, the reason I think this is important is kind of going back to what we were just talking about. First of all, clearly, I don't think it's working. But I think it's important because it plays into this illusion of free speech that we have in what Afshin you will call the NATO nations. And as a free speech, I do agree with. And of course, we want to promote kindness and we teach our children to be kind and all of this. But I think what's happening now is that this is how it's creating this generation of people who are just lacking the resilience and the ability to cope. Of course, things like Anti-Bullying Week is almost ridiculous because people who are unkind, of course, we've got things like trolls on Twitter and, you know, mean kids in school, they're going to say what they're going to say anyway, regardless of whether you've got an Anti-Bullying Week. But what it does create is people who aren't bullies and maybe don't say unkind things. It creates this anxiety in society where people are afraid to say what they think because they don't want to hurt people's feelings. And obviously we know people are now more offended and more upset by things than ever. But I feel like it creates this society that just lacks the resistance, or the resilience, sorry, to cope with everyday life. Do you agree with that, Afshin?
Because you want them to have cold showers. No, I feel bullied by Anti-Bullying Week. The very idea that any authorities in NATO countries backing the slaughter of children want children to somehow learn from their elders that it's wrong to bully people is absolutely absurd. And this goes back to the blowback of NATO nation policy on the alleged genocide we're witnessing on our TV screens, if we're lucky not to have them censored. It is outrageous. They've lost all authority. The teachers in schools, every element of society in NATO nations has lost any rights to be able to tell children to do anything. If there are rebellious teenagers bullying other people, they can just turn back to their teachers and say, "What do you mean? We live in a country with, as you said, an unelected by the people prime minister who is overseeing and backing and militarily backing the mass murder of children. They have no rights anymore."
Okay, well, they obviously would disagree with that. But Afshin, were you a bully in school? Or were you bullied?
I think I always felt I was bullied by the system itself, because think of all the differentiation in the schooling system in Britain. I went to about 13 different schools. So frankly, I was more bullied by the teachers, no matter what they said in the school reports, that I was bullying them.
Okay. And did that experience of bullying make you more or less resilient in your adult life?
Good question. I don't know. What about you? Were you bullied?
I think people throw the word bully around. I mean, sure.
Exactly, they do, don't they?
People would say mean things. I wouldn't have interpreted it as bullying. Probably someone else would. But hey, I'm still alive and kicking, and so are you. Well, off the back of that, actually, though, it's actually World Kindness Day today globally around the world. Let me ask you, what on World Kindness Day today is going to be your random act of kindness?
Random act of kindness. You know, in these days, we feel so powerless in our lives as we watch what's happening in Gaza. It's very difficult. You can see how people think, oh, you know, you could give some money to the Red Crescent or some sort of charity to help the people being blown apart by NATO weaponry. Is that an act of kindness to give some money to charity, or is it more important to raise awareness? I suppose the point about kindness is you've got to raise, at the very least, you need to raise awareness of the alleged genocide being perpetrated in the names of people who live in Western Europe and the United States for the impact on children in the Middle East.
So that's your act of kindness today, raising awareness?
No, I think it's a question, isn't it? I mean, it has to be said, the numbers of people that see violence as the way forward in the face of such violence against them will see as an act of kindness the act of resistance, because it'll be kindness to future generations. So, we need Nelson Mandela here to tell us, and he's alas dead, about what kindness means in a age of resistance, revolution, and anti-imperialism.
All right, well, I'm not sure that was quite an answer, but I will accept it. And actually, on that point, I must say, before we move on to Tuesday,
we're still only at Tuesday. Okay.
Now we're on Monday.
All right.
And then we'll move on quickly. But I do just want to say, you know, on a more serious note, the UN today will be giving a moment of silence to UN staff members who have died in Gaza in the last few weeks. Over 100 UN staff members have died in the region, which is, of course, incredibly sad, as are all the deaths as the result of this renewed violence.
Deaths or murders, and a minute's silence after breakfast at the United Nations. Was a minute silence at the United Nations in New York after breakfast going to do? I have to say the UN has been better than I expected, especially the Secretary General, who, of course, Israel said should immediately resign for his behavior. But is it really...
I don't disagree with you there, Afshin, but what I hope is it's a way for the UN to really reflect on itself and to take a good look at itself, because, of course, we can trace this current conflict back to 1947 with the UN partition plan for Palestine, which adopted Resolution 181, and that ultimately led to Jewish sectors being created in what was then known as Palestine, which Israel arguably violated and violated the border areas. And since then, the UN hasn't done anything about
it. Well, according to UN resolutions at the Security Council.
Okay, but
subsequently.
I say arguably because Israel say that's not true and they haven't done anything wrong. But the point is that there can be several UN resolutions, general assemblies, and they can condemn Hamas, they can condemn Israel, but ultimately their hands are tied and there's nothing that anyone's physically going to do.
They have the blue berets. I mean, they're financed hugely by the United States disproportionately. I mean, they are financed by China and Russia as well, but can't they send the armed blue berets to protect other UN workers who are facing extermination at the hands of British, EU nation, American weaponry in Gaza tonight? Couldn't they? Maybe they can't, because they'd have to get American agreement to deploy them. But I don't know.
I will allow us to move on to Tuesday now. And
instead of a minute's silence, a minute's increasing volume and noise from the UN Secretariat would perhaps be more useful at saving future deaths.
Of course, the UN is saying they're doing what they can and they don't take any blame from this. Of course, it was... you know, the decision of people who were in power decades ago, and they won't accept blame for that per se. But Tuesday now, which we'll lead on to this, tomorrow, the UN Relief and Works Agency is holding a select committee and hearing evidence on the situation in Gaza, and the Human Rights Watch will be there as well. So we can only hope that maybe that will achieve something.
And it's also 11 years to the day that Israel, again with American weapons and British weapons, bombed Gaza. So the idea being promoted, especially in United States media, that somehow this began on the 11th of October, 2023, shows up in the fact that it was 11 years. Which day? 7th.
7th.
Oh, yeah. 7th of October. But the point is that date is immaterial to the numbers who have been killed disproportionately of Palestinians, given that it's 11 years to the day on Tuesday of another bombing. Famous bombing there.
But of course, you know, Hamas has taken Israeli hostages, and that's why they will say they're bombing Hamas. And
after Israel, bombing. After Israel took,
but of course, that would be there.
Hostages. I mean, yeah, exactly. I think more interesting, actually, arguably, yeah. is that there's a Brussels meeting on Tuesday. I understand where they're going to discuss.
I was going to go straight on to that action. Is that the EU defense ministers meeting?
Yeah, or war minister, really. Are they defensive EU ministers?
Well, they will be talking about the other war that we seem to have forgotten about in recent weeks, and that is Ukraine and Russia. And they will be talking about EU support to Ukraine.
What happened to Zelensky's visit to Gaza that we were talking about on last week's forecast news? I don't think Netanyahu wanted him at all. But I think the landmine report on the same day, the Tuesday, will show the amount of landmines placed by Ukrainian forces and cluster bombs and all the rest of the weaponry that NATO nations gave to Ukraine, which will harm generations of future Ukrainians after their inevitable defeat, as predicted, even by leaks now to NBC News in the United States, who are saying Biden officials want some kind of ceasefire and negotiated settlement finally.
In Ukraine?
In Ukraine. No, they definitely don't want to cease fire in Gaza. They appear, according to most Palestinians' viewpoints, to want all 2 million people in Gaza to die.
I've not heard of any credible reports saying that they're looking for a ceasefire in Ukraine.
NBC News. There was a leak to NBC News saying there should be some, Zelensky should be exploring the possibility of allowing Russia to have the bits that it's taken after the failure of the Minsk Accords.
Possibly, but I can't imagine any US officials or decision makers are going to take that decision.
I thought you'd be more interested anyway in Liberia's general election, presidential election on Tuesday. Much bigger deal. What's his name? George Weah and Joseph Boakai. George Weah, US puppet previously. Liberia famous because most ships in the world always have the flag of Liberia for all sorts of weird and kind of opaque reasons.
I would say I don't think there are enough people familiar with Liberia, and I don't think it's going to be.
When were you last there, Millie?
Huh?
When were you last in Liberia? It would be actually suspicious if you.
There because no one else cares. Moving on.
No, I think it's really important. Really important. Let alone. Okay. The South Korea summit with Lloyd Austin. That's well, what's he doing there? Trying to create a North Korea war? What's Raytheon's Lloyd Austin?
Well, I would like actually to move on to AFSHIN, something arguably lighter, and that is King Charles III, who will be turning 75 tomorrow. And I've got to say, AFSHIN, I'm sure you'll disagree with me, but I am happy that he's had the chance to become king and he's still in good health, and he's done a good job, in my opinion, and I'm glad that he's had a chance to do that and to really redeem himself.
He's done a good job. I mean, the point about him turning 75 on the day of the annual landmines report is interesting because we all know the way from even The Crown on Netflix, how he treated his ex-wife, his dead wife, Diana. And Diana was so obsessed by landmines. That was her cause, to eradicate landmines around the world. You won't hear King Charles, who is used by arms companies to lobby for them, or maybe they use him, and who has said nothing, as far as I know, about the plight of the Palestinian children, far preferring to take the Israeli line. On his 75th birthday, he will not mention landlines, even the day the report comes out, even though, of course, his dead wife was so keen on them. Because I suppose, you know, it's not his thing.
I don't think that matters. I mean, you say how he treated her, but of course we only really get one side of the story anyway. So,
well, yeah, but he won't mention landmines. Why is that? We know why.
he's probably got more important things to talk about, in my opinion. But anyway, I would like to wish him a happy birthday, nonetheless. Now, Wednesday. Oh, actually, you will like this next one, I have to say. It may be Wednesday, it may be later in the week. I think a date has not been quite decided. But Rupert Murdoch, at age 92, is due to step down this week from what you will call the Murdoch Press, but the correct name is News Corp. He will be stepping down this week, and it will be taken over by, I believe, his favourite son, Lachlan. Lachlan.
Well, there's a fight, isn't there, between them all, Lachlan, Elizabeth James, and
yeah, but it is the favourite, Lachlan Murdoch, who will be, Lachlan Murdoch, who will be taken over, who's, of course, CEO of Fox News Corporation, who was recently involved in a lawsuit because he had apparently allowed Fox News journalists to claim that the 2020 election was stolen from Trump, or so-called stolen, and they have just paid out $787 million to avoid a trial. So,
in fairness, he wasn't so much to do with that, though, was he? I mean, the thing about him is he's a globalization fan, so he's going to try and take control of Fox and turn it against Trump, but turn it against the Republicans. And that's where Lachlan Murdoch's coming from, very against that, his father's neoconservative views, is what some people are saying. But anyway, clearly, I suppose Rupert Murdoch's ill. Why else would he step down? And if he's ill, it ends up in the hands of Lachlan, Elizabeth, and James Murdoch.
I would think at 92, it's quite fair at that point to say, right, it's time for retirement. I think you've had a good run at that point. So I would say he's earned it. He's earned it.
Yeah.
Also, on Wednesday, I consider this good news. US President Joe Biden and China's Xi Jinping will be meeting at the San Francisco summit. And it is the first time that they have met since the G20 summit in Bali last November. And I really think on this, considering last week, if you remember, we were talking about the Paris Peace Forum, which had claimed on its website, we're in a world dominated by a rising US-China rivalry, because everyone's talking about that right now. And I think it's great news that these leaders are talking, you know, leaders from the two richest countries in the world. And I think it's great that they're trying to have a talk and hopefully, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Putin was invited as well to that APEC summit meeting in San Francisco, but the invitation was made belatedly. And of course, the United States couldn't guarantee his security. Of course, the US media, especially right-wing media, will be talking about whether Xi Jinping has a balloon with him. That seems to be the level of conversation over there. There'll be lots of anti-China pieces.
Well, I think it's good news. There are said to be thousands of protesters who will be in San Francisco in light of this meeting, but I'm looking forward to it. I really hope it's going to be good news, and who knows, maybe Taiwan won't be a thing after this meeting.
I think Taiwan will be a thing, definitely be a thing.
But I think it's good news for the world.
Although, can the American warships even go to war with China as the United States has sought to make us all believe, given all their big warships are now in the Eastern Mediterranean to fight off Hamas? Five. I don't know what they're in the Eastern Mediterranean, but five American soldiers were killed in the past 48 hours in mysterious, or is it 72 hours? Or maybe it was Friday. That's very right. Secretive news about why these five American soldiers were killed. Completely unconfirmed rumors spreading like wildfire in the Middle East.
On the boat, the fleet.
Yeah, but some were saying, were they actually killed in Gaza fighting with Israeli troops? And this is all a big conspiracy, and actually they weren't killed while on the plane.
They crashed into the sea.
What's that? They crashed into the sea, yeah. Where are the bodies? Why is it so secret, all this news? How many more American soldiers are going to die?
Because they said they crashed into the sea. So I don't know how you crash into the sea, but...
I think there was a refueling they're making out and a helicopter. And anyway, the cost to the US Treasury of all these hijinks in the Eastern Mediterranean, where American servicemen and women are dying for no apparent cause while the money can be spent at home ahead of the possible government shutdown, which we're expecting. I mean, it's beggar's belief.
Yeah, well, that's coming later in the week, but actually on Thursday, that is the APEC CEO summit, which I think you were referring to earlier, and Biden and Xi will be heading to that. It is the APEC CEO summit, or the Summit of Asia Pacific Capitalism, as I like to call it. Has less of a ring to it.
That's the whole thing in San Francisco. They're all there for all the APEC stuff. Although without Russia there. And why is Lloyd Austin in South Korea in the middle of the APEC forum with the defense ministers talking about war with North Korea while APEC discussions are on in San Francisco?
Well, that's actually on the same day. On Thursday, the Association of Southeast Asian Nations are conducting its annual defense ministers meeting. So that's why Lloyd Austin is there with them. Now, it's hosted by Indonesia, I'll also add. And there'll be representatives from several countries, including Russia, including China. And again, maybe this could be a way for all of these countries to talk, and maybe some renewed diplomatic relations will ensue.
While everyone's minds is really focused. But while everyone's minds is really focused on Gaza and the brutality of the United States in backing, in opposing a ceasefire. So, you know, there's no real moral level of the United States at any of these meetings is the problem right now. Everyone just considers the United States a complicit partner in alleged genocide. So how are they going to talk to people?
This is all to do with what side of the argument you're on. You know, a lot of people would disagree.
There's only one argument when children are being murdered by multi-billion dollar weapons. I thought you'd be talking about Walmart. Do they still own Asda in Britain? I can't remember. The richest country in the world by revenue has results on the Thursday.
Statistics coming out.
Yeah, but Walmart is the large, the Waltons family. It's the largest company in the, like the largest revenues of any company in the world is this Walmart supermarket company. And the results come out on Thursday. So that'll be interesting to watch. I presume they'll just be making more and more money. And they've already expressed their support for Israel.
Though the CEO of Walmart is set to be at the APEC CEO summit.
Is he?
That big of a company after all, but better check that actually. I could be wrong there, but
No, he won't be there, but they'll be having results anyway, won't they? Anyway, surely the Madagascar elections are more important.
Madagascar elections now as well, yeah. Yes.
Rajoelina looking for another. Well, it's this guy, Andry Rajoelina, dual French national. I don't know, it was discovered by the press that he secretly had French nationality. He's looking for another term. And his chief of staff was detained over the summer over corruption charges on emeralds, diamonds, and rubies. The interesting thing here will be whether NATO press tries to paint him as evil if he happens to want to turn and pivot to China, or whether he's going to continue to be a US proxy in this strategic place in the Indian Ocean and just allow mineral rights and energy rights and rare earth mineral rights to British and American and Canadian and Korean mining giants to just take up the country where 70% of the country live on less than a dollar a day.
Okay, well, I suppose we better look out for that one. I'm sure it's going to be headline news all over the world.
I don't think it will be. They won't even be covering the Venezuela meeting in Moscow with the foreign minister, even though NATO countries have been telling everyone that there's some guy in, now he teaches in Florida, Juan Guaido, that he's really the president of Venezuela, the country with the largest known energy resources on earth. Foreign minister of Venezuela meets Lavrov in Moscow on Thursday.
Well, I think if the Madagascar elections aren't being covered around the world, there's probably a reason for that. And the reason is probably it's not as important as...
No, the reason is they want to cover it up. And the fact that there are minerals from Madagascar in our phones, you know,
we're heading into territorial territory.
Do you not eat vanilla ice cream? The best vanilla comes from Madagascar. Even that.
I don't know, it's bad for the environment.
There's a reason why they don't cover elections in places like Madagascar, because all their stuff, all their resources are being exploited by NATO nation companies.
Okay, well, anyway, let's move on to the next story of Thursday, or so the people don't switch off. On Thursday, the International Court of Justice will be deciding on whether or not provisional measures will need to be made in the case brought by Canada and the Netherlands against Syria, accused of
in the same week as American bombing of Syria. This ridiculous ICJ court is going to decide on a Canadian case that says that Syria to blame for what's been happening in Syria, not NATO nations and British bombing of Syria. I mean, the absurdity.
So interesting, Afrin. The Human Rights Watch, right, said they've documented Syrian security agencies arbitrarily detained, kidnapped, tortured, and killed refugees who returned to Syria between 2017 and 2021. The UN has backed this and said Syrian government has been torturing and carrying out inhuman or degrading treatment for punishment. The Human Rights Watch has said this, and I know when the Human Rights Watch criticizes Israel or the United States or Ukraine, that's when you say the Human Rights Watch is correct.
The Human Rights Watch is known to be a highly discredited source in so many different regions. They are very keen on Palestine because they reflect that turn in U.S. society against traditional U.S. Unlimited backing for the Israeli government. But Human Rights Watch is part of the human rights industry, weaponized by U.S. foreign policy to aid in military attacks, regime change. You'll notice Human Rights Watch attacking Venezuela, attacking Iran, attacking all the official enemies that NATO country populations are supposed to believe in. So I think we should... Wonder about Human Rights Watch all the time.
Human Rights Watch condemning Israel or the United States or Ukraine, then we'll have that conversation. But you've also got to acknowledge that, yes, a lot of countries around the world have done awful things and against what we would call international law. The United States, I'm sure, has been in breach several times. But that doesn't take away from what Syria has done or allegedly done. They, of course, deny it. But why does that mean they shouldn't be punished for what allegedly the crimes they have also committed?
I think the reason why they shouldn't be punished is because the International Court of Justice has shown itself to be not a court that believes that justice is blind, because it only attacks those countries not in line with NATO policy. So therefore, they have no right to adjudicate on a matter of alleged torture in Syria. Obviously, they're not, subpoenaing or extraditing or seeking a warrant for the arrest of the Biden administration, of the Bush administration. Guantanamo is, or the Obama administration, Guantanamo is still open. It's infamous for torture. Abu Ghraib was infamous for torture. So the ICJ has no rights. At the moment, International Court of The Hague is seeking the extradition of Vladimir Putin of Russia, as far as I understand it. So it's the end of the human rights industry, I think, when they did that, really, and the whole rest of the world saw that the NATO war on Russia through Ukraine was a scam. So it's the end of that kind of human rights era. All those judges, all those lawyers, it's over for them. And that's what the war in Ukraine signaled. And a kind of lucky time, really, because as is being repeatedly said at the State Department press meetings from some journalists, surely Antony Blinken and the State Department are now complicit in genocide, in which case all the Biden administration can be done for complicity under international humanitarian law. It'll never happen. No, but there's a reason. The reason it'll never happen is because it's the end of years of this books written about international humanitarian law. It's over. We now know the whole thing was a scam being promulgated, obviously with honorable people. There are lots of honorable people in the humanitarian law professions, but they were naive not to understand that the financing of the ICJ, international courts, all of these legal lawfare arrangements were being done secretly by the military industrial complex in NATO nations to use to try and attack China, to try and attack all the perceived enemies of the United States.
Well, I think it's very far-fetched to say it's a scam. Of course, they're not perfect. Many institutions aren't. Many institutions have bias. We know that. Countries do. Everyone does. But to say it's a scam, I think, is a little far-fetched. But we better move on.
It's not bias. It's a court with inbuilt as a weapon. It might as well be a cruise missile to say, boycott China because of the Uyghurs, boycott Iran because of the way it treats women, boycott. This is what it's there to be done while the United States supports regimes throughout Latin America and Africa that torture, kill, detain, and while the United States itself imprisons more people per capita than Stalin or Mao or Adolf Hitler. I mean, you know, that's the kind of situation we're in. It's not bias.
I'm sure it would say it's looking all into all of those cases and only brings cases forward if they find there's a significant amount of evidence for them. But anyway, we better move on. And I do have some lighter news for you next, Ashton. This is one for you, and you better cancel your plans on
the 83rd anniversary of the Warsaw Ghetto. I knew you'd have that as a lighter piece of news.
That's not it. But I think you will be delighted to hear that the final series of The Crown will be coming out on Thursday, which, of course, you referenced last week. So you better cancel your schedule, cancel your diaries, and you'll be
Million
able to
Million Ashton's forecast do not get money from The Crown for advertising it, we should add.
But we should.
No, I mean, you know, it's all right. I don't think it was as good as Succession.
Friday,
Saturday, and Sunday. We'll just have to do them in quick succession.
Friday, Succession, like what you did there.
Go ahead.
So Friday, again, it's the International Court of Justice, busy week for them, because they will be ruling on provisional measures in Armenia's case against Azerbaijan. A complicated conflict, of course. Obviously, both were previous constituent member states of the Soviet Union. But Armenia is, of course, accusing Azerbaijan of ethnic cleansing and forcibly displacing tens of thousands of people as part of the dispute over the region known as the Nagorno-Karabakh.
That's right. And in recent years, or recent months, really, the United States has been meddling around in Armenia to make it, I mean, there are people talking about a color revolution there. So Russia is very interested in that. Russia brokered the peace on Nagorno-Karabakh in the past 18 months. It'll be interesting to see what Armenia is going to achieve by going to this discredited court, because, as I said, you know, the United States doesn't care what the ICJ says. No one cares what the ICJ says except the vassal states of the United States, because it's founded on U.S. principles. There's no way anyone in the United States would care what's happening there. So I think the important thing about the International Court of Justice is it is shut down immediately and some new one is created at the behest of the UN or something, because, you know, what's the point of the ICJ? The United States doesn't care about it.
Well, you can what's the point of the UN? What's the point in any of these institutions?
No, I think what's important about the UN is everyone can talk. The ICJ is a court which only prosecutes those official enemies of Washington. So you can't have a court that only prosecutes enemies of Washington and calls itself the International Criminal Court. It's like the World Series. Is that baseball? It's not an International Court of Justice if most of the world doesn't think it applies to them. Or we could start it. We could call it Million Afshin's International Court of Justice. It's the same kind of thing.
We could. Maybe we'd do a better job at prosecuting. Who knows? Elsewhere on Friday, the Fox Corporation, as we have mentioned earlier, of course, owned by the
Murdoch family. That's the Murdoch, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, yes, owned by the Murdoch family. And as we said earlier, Lachlan Murdoch is CEO of. They will be holding its annual shareholder meeting on Friday. Afshin, will you be investing?
I've been listening to that Michael Wolff audiobook about the Murdochs, I have to say. It'll be interesting because Fox is terrified that Lachlan Murdoch is going to destroy it. It's going to sack all the right-wing anchors and have NBC-style neoliberal anchors involved instead. So I think there'll be a fair degree of worry and some despair at that meeting in Los Angeles. More important is it's the 40th anniversary of the founding of the Zapatista movement in Mexico and the amazing guerrilla leader, Subcomandante Marcos, who spearheaded the first virtual resistance movement founded in Mexico City. It came through on the internet, and he's talked about neoliberalism in a way that enchanted people all over the global south, in Africa and Southeast Asia, in Latin America, and in Western Europe, and even in the United States. So 40 years since the Zapatistas, not that much success. People don't remember him so well now, but if you don't know who he is, Google Subcomandante Marcos, and you'll see a man in a balaclava with a pipe who talks about how globalization has impoverished the world's masses. And I think we're seeing his predictions come true today.
Okay, well, that's one to look into if you're not hugely familiar. I'm not hugely familiar myself, but that's an interesting one.
They don't really cover him in the press, do they? I don't know where he is. No one knows who he is, I think. People said he was some academic. No one really knows. He has a horse, though. There's a famous picture of him on a horse somewhere in the jungles of southeastern Mexico.
Yeah, well, they'll probably be covering it as much as they're covering the Madagascar elections, so we won't hold our breath. Saturday, then, here's a Groundhog Day story, actually. Here's a Groundhog Day story.
What's that? Which one?
Well, the US, yet again for the second time this year, is facing a federal government shutdown. Yet again, and that happens, of course, if we explain, it's when lawmakers can't agree on a funding plan. And there have been 10 of these throughout history, and the most recent one and longest one was 2018 to 2019, which was 35 days long under the Trump administration. But I really just think this is just unbelievable. I mean, the richest country in the world can't agree on funding, facing government shutdowns. It's not the first one to have happened.
They'll get the money, won't they, at the last minute? But the interesting thing is the provision that expires on that day was done with the explicit defunding of Zelensky in Ukraine. So it'll be interesting to see whether the new one, which takes them over for another month, again stops Zelensky from getting his hands on the cash. Zelensky, of course, has been saying, okay, don't give us cash then. Give us an American Express card and we can borrow on credit and pay it back later. Others, more cynical about Zelensky, think he's got enough money already, given his reputed houses in Florida and shopping sprees as his people suffer so badly.
By the by, but the fact that this is happening repeatedly and lawmakers can't agree and make decisions. I mean, I say you're a democracy. You've just got to do the job and do what you were elected to do and make
decisions. But the money is still there for the weaponry. The money is still there for the ammunition and weaponry to slaughter thousands of children in Gaza. So whatever happens, they may shut down federal programs and libraries, federally funded local libraries in American towns and cities, but they'll still be enough to stop children in Gaza from learning from libraries because they might not have their lives, let alone books.
Okay. Well, as they would say, different departments anyway, so it doesn't even matter. And a lot of people would say that it's good that the US puts a lot of money into its military because people regard that as a gives the impression of security and safety. So that's a whole other argument altogether.
I fear for the blowback to the lack of security and lack.
Well, on that point, though, at the same time that this is going on or potentially happens, there's a session at the International Institute for Strategic Studies.
MI6 think tank.
Well, there, yeah, okay. Then Manamar dialogue, which begins on Friday, actually, but on Saturday, the agenda will be the US commitment to the Middle East. And there'll be a session on new Arab initiatives for regional peace.
Are you going, Millie? I mean, it's very odd, these sorts of things. I mean, do they actually invite members of Hamas? How do they have a debate about Middle East and policy?
You're trying to say I'm a member of Hamas.
No, but I'm saying these sorts of opaque organizations like this International Strategic Studies place where MI6 people go to die, arguably. How can they debate things amongst all the players if they don't invite the terrorists? What's the point?
Because they would say they don't communicate with terrorists. They don't talk to terrorists.
I suppose they might blow up the auditorium. They might blow up the auditorium.
Well, how could you reason with them? But I would say US and the Middle East, it is looking increasingly difficult, I think, with pressure to condemn Israel and anger from several Middle Eastern nations over the fail to do so. I think U.S. influence in the Middle East is going to become increasingly difficult, I would say, right now.
I agree.
Don't agree with me.
I think increasingly difficult, yes. No, clearly, I mean, right across the Arab world, the global south, I mean, the Latin American countries were the first to say Israel was no longer, couldn't even have ambassadors there. Across the world, the United States' name is dirt, as these pictures of the murdered children are broadcast on social media to billions of people.
Sure. Well, we better get through Saturday quickly. I think you've made your point on that. Here's one for the science geeks, actually. From Saturday, it will mark the beginning of the World Antimicrobial Resistance Awareness Week, which is an international campaign to raise awareness or an understanding of antimicrobial resistance and strategies to combat it. The World Health Organization has actually declared that AMR is one of the top 10 global public health threats facing humanity. So,
could be the most important story we're actually discussing this week.
I know.
Who knows? That's the irony. You see, you're laughing in Madagascar. That antimicrobial resistance story will not be covered at great length as it might, because obviously pharmaceutical profits rely on all these different types of drugs, to a lesser extent, I suppose, the antibiotics that promote antimicrobial resistance.
Antimicrobial.
But clearly, all around the world, the first thing that doctors give, even if you've got a viral cough, which shouldn't get antibiotics, isn't it to do with that? They shouldn't be doling out that. And it's a result of poor public healthcare systems in NATO nations, let alone the global south, where they just run to antibiotics.
Well, I suppose we would argue if there are any breakthroughs in the antimicrobial resistance, it will go straight to Big Pharma for profit and, they will take advantage.
In fairness, a lot of these drugs are generic, the ones causing the most harm. But again, it's impossible watching all the pictures coming from Gaza and realizing they're having to do cesarean sections without anesthesia and clean wounds with vinegar to think that on the one hand, we're talking about too much prescribing of these sorts of drugs while they are in the sort of medieval period in Gaza because of United States, British and European Union nation bombing of Gaza.
Well, that's why we can only hope tomorrow at the UN Relief and Works Agency meeting that they can work on getting more to Gaza. I don't disagree with you there.
There's no point in getting aid to Gaza to save people's lives if they're then going to be bombed and killed by American and British weapons the next day. Ceasefire is the only way to stop this situation. Why give food and medicine to an area where they're going to bomb with United States, Britain, and EU nation weaponry the next day?
Okay, but still they need aid anyway, regardless of whether there's a ceasefire or not. So,
but what's the point?
few emphasis tried to give. And
what's the point of aid giving aid to a population you murdered? It's actually prolonging the misery. The most important thing is a ceasefire, much more important than aid. And of course, we know the corruption of aid, the way that the aid industry works in developing nations, taking masses of money while people in those aid agencies live in luxury hotels in global south countries. The aid industry has been debunked by so many. The most important thing for Gaza is not aid. And you'll see from Western politicians, they will always talk about aid. That's a deliberate attempt at stopping people understanding that aid is not the panacea that we require here. What we need is these US, British, European Union nation weapon companies to be attacked in some way in terms of their de facto funding by their populations to kill all these children. There's no point in fattening people up before you kill them.
Fattening people up before you kill them. Okay. Well, I think let's move on to Sunday. We've had a lot on Gaza. Sunday is actually, around the world, it's Women's Entrepreneurship Day. And I was actually under the impression that women were allowed to be entrepreneurs every day in this day and age. But maybe
no, you're only allowed one day, Millie. One day is enough.
Apparently so.
Look how few women entrepreneurs there are, actually. Why is that?
Because they're only allowed to do it one day a year.
Oh. Well, so what we need is the abolition of Women's Entrepreneurship Day. So every day can be Women's Entrepreneurship Day, maybe.
Yes. Well, funnily enough, though, on Women's Entrepreneurship Day, speaking of women empowerment, Sunday will also be 2 years since Kamala Harris was U.S. president for one day, for 24 hours. And that was the first time, that was 2 years ago, I have to say. Two years ago is the date that she was U.S. president. For the first time in history that the U.S. had a woman president, because Biden was on medical leave.
Which proves to all the detractors that, you know, the earth is still here and Kamala Harris was president for a day. So maybe women can go for the top job after all, even Kamala Harris.
I mean, I'll just take it as a sign to reignite my my flame to becoming the next Margaret Thatcher. There is hope.
Well, we've all seen how her acolyte has now become Foreign Secretary after being Prime Minister of the United Kingdom.
Well, we won't even get into that. That's going to be a whole nother episode. But we better finish it here, I think. I think that's given a good indication of what's going to be coming up around the week. So thank you again if you've been listening for this long or you've been watching. We appreciate you listening to the News Forecast with Millie and Afshin.
The News Forecast.
What is it? The Forecast News.
Exactly.
Forecast News.
The week ahead. This is the only place where you'll find out what's going to happen next week, not what happened last week.
Exactly. We will tell you the news before it happens. But yeah, do let us know what you think of this episode. Like, comment, subscribe, whatever you've got. And if we haven't been cancelled by next week, you never know in this day and age, we will be back to give you more upcoming news. And we'll see you next week.
See you next week.